Welcome to Prevent Connect Audio.
Welcome to a Prevent Connect Audio conference recording. The following was recorded on May 21st at a Call to Men's 2009 Annual National Conference in New York City, New York. To learn more about A Call to Men, visit their website at www.acalltomen.org.
Our next speaker represents, I think, a commitment that we're all very proud of, and that is the role of athletes in ending violence against women. For years, that has been one of those places where we as women, and then as men joined with us, where we have felt that there was indeed a need to engage in dialogue and conversation about the image that is perpetrated by, or perpetuated rather, by men in athletic arenas. And so I would like to welcome Joe Ehrman, who is a coach and former NFL player, and who is the co-founder of an organization called Building Men and Women for Others, along with his wife, Paula. So, Joe, if you will join us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Why don't we stand for a moment and do me this favor. Turn to somebody next to you and just give them in a sentence your definition of masculinity. Why don't you just stand for a second? How do you define masculinity or manhood? I'm gonna pull you back up here. But I think what you'll see is there's a crisis on this issue of masculinity. You think of the number of boys in America that have no clear and compelling definition of manhood, of masculinity. They haven't been nurtured, trained, nor have they seen it modeled. And boy, and one of the leading messengers to boys in this culture comes through the world of sports. Before I begin, though, I really want to thank Ted and Tony and Dolores for this wonderful opportunity to be in this room. There are a number of people here that have mentored me for many years that I've never met. They don't know me or have any idea how they've influenced me. So I want to thank Tony and Ted and all of them and all of you for the work you do. I was thinking of the story about the guy that was took his family out for a drive one afternoon in the country. And they're out in the back road, and suddenly they're enjoying the scenery, and suddenly a deer ran across the road, and the guy had a swerve, and he ended up in this ditch, and the car is stuck. He's got no cell phone reception. The kids are in the backyard, in the back seat. He doesn't know what in the world he's going to do. And suddenly down the road comes this farmer with his old horse, Dan. And the farmer looked at the situation, and he says to the driver of the car, he said, "Listen, I'll hitch up old Dan to your car, and he'll pull it out." And with that, he hitched up old Dan to the car, and he started to holler, "Pull silver, pull trigger, pull bullet, pull Dan." And with that, old Dan lifted the car out of the ditch, and the guy was extremely thankful, but he said to the farmer, he said, "Listen, I got to ask you, why did you call him three different names before you got to old Dan?" And he says, "Well, you see, old Dan's kind of blind, and if he thought he was the only one pulling." So it must be a wonderful thing for people that have been in this work so long to see so many people come together here. As part of Building Men and Women for Others, I run a thing called Coach for America. The purpose of Coach for America is to create a tipping point in America where the physical, social, emotional, moral, and civic well-being of players is no longer considered outside the scope of what coaches or sports ought to try to accomplish. And part of that vision was to take groups like yours with this significant information and use coaches as disseminators of that information in the context of practice and in the context of that player-coach relationship. So when Mahatma Gandhi was taking on the British Empire, when he was fighting colonialism and a caste system, Gandhi said there were seven deadly social sins. And those were politics without principle, business without morality, wealth without work, pleasure without conscience, education without character, science without humanity, and worship without sacrifice. And I would say that if Gandhi were in America today, Gandhi would have listed 8 deadly social sins. And the 8th would have been sports that aren't built around some moral and ethical foundation. You think of the role that sports plays in America today. You think of the role it plays in the socialization of boys in this country. Sports will engage more individuals, more families, more communities than any cultural activity, organization, or religion in this country. It has become the secular religion of America. Every year, there are 30 million children that play recreational sports. There's another 10 million that play interscholastic. That's 40 million children with somewhere between 40 and 80 million parents behind them standing in front of 5 million coaches, many of whom are keepers of this whole socialization process and keepers of the boy code. You think about the role that advertising connected to sports plays in media. You look at sports today, there will be approximately, just in the NFL, there's somewhere between 5 million youth that watch sports every Sunday across the country. You think about the advertising, the way it portrays this image of masculinity. It's messages about sex, objectification of women, alcohol, violence, and erectile dysfunction. Every boy in this country is taught that they are going to be measured by the ability to get it up. And as a young boy, you sit there and listen, and you know that if it stays up for too long, you better get to a doctor quick. You know, this socialization process, I would say that the 3 scariest words that every boy in America receives is when he's told to be a man. And I would challenge all the men in this room to just think of the context every time someone told you to be a man. Be a man. Stop crying. Stop feeling that way. Stop emoting. I need you to toughen up, be stronger, move away from anything considered feminine, and I need you to be a man. Boy, boys in this country are fed 3 fundamental lies, and they come from this culture, and they impact young boys 24/7. When I talk about culture, I'm talking about the messages that boys receive that come from movies and media and magazines and music and Madison Ave 24/7. Every boy in America, by the time he's 8 or 9 years old, he's learned the first lie. And they learn this on ball fields and playgrounds and during recess all over this country. The first lie our culture teaches young boys about masculinity is somehow, as a culture, we associate masculinity with issues of athletic ability. Somehow it says something to do with size or strength or some kind of skill set that allows you to compete with other boys and win. So that boy in the playground of America, 9 years old, that boy that can catch the down and out or hit the hanging curve, that boy is elevated in this culture. He's seen as having more value, more worth. That boy is ascribed a little more masculinity. And I would say that boy is set up for a tremendous failure and frustration in life, because being a man doesn't have a single thing to do with athletic ability, size, or strength. But you think about all the other boys on that playground. Boys don't just play sports. Boys ought to have the freedom to do dance or drama, debate, whatever their passions lie. 8, 9 years old in this culture, those boys are pushed against the peripheral of the playground, and they're impregnated with this idea that somehow they don't have what it takes to be a man. Boy, that's ludicrous. Second lie is this, and every boy in this country learns this by the time they're in junior high school. That is, we associate masculinity as a culture with issues of sexual conquest. What's it mean to be a man? It means you can bring young girls alongside of yourself and then use them. Use them to validate some kind of masculine insecurity, or use them to gratify some kind of physical need. That certainly doesn't make you a man. That makes you a user of other human beings. Third lie you learn a little later in this culture, and that is, we associate masculinity with issues of economic success. as though you can measure what a man is based on his job title, his position, his power, or the amount of possessions someone has accumulated. Boy, you've got all these young boys in this country, no clear and compelling definition of what it means to be a man, haven't been guided, nurtured, trained, nor seated, modeled, and they've got these messages coming 24/7. And you know who ends up being the role model for boys in America? And remember, a role model is someone you model your behavior after. They end up being who in America? Professional athletes. Why? Not because we've taught young people to evaluate their character or see how they're leveraging their platform for the betterment of society, but because they manifest those three fundamental lines. They have size and strength. They have power and dominating control on the sports arena. They have all kinds of opportunity for sexual conquest, and they become have economic success. You could take those three lies and tie them to just about every social problem we have in this country. Boy, it's at the foundation and the fore of domestic violence and sexual assault in this country. There's a crisis around this issue. So what I did, and part of what I do with Coach for America, I was a high school football coach, and I started to see that what an incredible way this platform, this power that a coach has in relationship to their players. Boy, it's an unbelievable. If sports is a secular religion, the coach has become the high priest of that religion. So started to see that sports ought to be nothing more than a platform to help boys become men. Boy, you've got to have a definition of what it means to be a man. So my definition of masculinity centers around two criteria and only two criteria. What's it mean to be a man? And it's the same criteria for women. First and foremost, it's the ability to have relationships, the capacity to love and be loved. What's it mean to be a man? It means you can look somebody in the eye and tell someone you love them and receive that love back. It's being able to express and identify and name and share emotions and feelings. The problem with the socialization process is it teaches young boys to deny, suppress, ignore, and never share their feelings. Boy, and when you don't understand your own feelings, it's almost impossible to understand other people's feelings, to develop any sense of empathy. It's at the foundation. There's a national empathy deficit disorder in this country of young people that's creating tremendous, tremendous problems. What's it mean to be a man? It means you have the ability to relate and connect and form meaningful relationships. The second criteria of masculinity and humanity is that you ought to have some kind of cause, some kind of purpose in your life that's bigger than who and what you are. Boy, it's your responsibility to make this world a better place. So I developed the coaching philosophies that said my whole purpose of coaching was to help boys become men of empathy and integrity who will lead, be responsible, and change the world for good. And once you get your why correct, that then dictates all the hows. Boy, it took all of my coaching and socialization, and it moved it outside of the box. So fundamentally, what I do is I take a 12-week high school season, and I divide it into six-week sections. For 6 weeks, I'm going to teach my players, based on the power of the whistle, how to develop relationships. I'm going to teach them the process of becoming a good man. I'm going to teach them about all the cultural messages and why they're wrong. I'm going to teach them how to serve other people. And then for 6 weeks, I'm going to take a topic a week, and I'm going to help them either discover or deploy their own personal cause, something to give their life to. So I'll teach them about racism, poverty, educational inequality. I'll teach them about social justice, a host of different issues. The week that we have homecoming dance with in our school, that's the week we're going to teach our boys how to respect women and to stand up and speak out on behalf of them. So let me just take you through an illustration. And this is what I teach coaches, how to use that platform. I take 10 minutes before every practice and a half hour before the game to teach to the topic of the week. So the week of the homecoming dance, I'm going to start teaching them. So the team will come down, and the first thing before practice begins, I'll get them there, and I'll start off with a message. You know that girl that you're taking to the dance? That's not something to be conquered or used. That is some mother and father's most prized possession, and you ought to treat her in a way that you want your mother and your sister to be treated. Well, and then I'll have them just kind of close their eyes and do a meditation in full equipment, helmets on. And I'll just have them close their eyes, get connected to their breathing. Then I'll ask them to just think about the last time somebody called you a name that really hurt you. Think about the words that were used. Think about the intent of the person that used those words. Think about how they made you feel. Boy, and once I get them connected to that, I then ask them as high school boys, think about what it means to a high school girl when you call her fat or ugly or a slut or some kind of put down. Think of the power of your words. I'll bring them down another day and I'll just have them kind of go through a scenario. You're at a party and one girl there is stupid drunk. Boy, and one of your teammates is trying to have sex with her. What do you do in that situation? Do you just walk by like that's none of your business? Do you think maybe Bobby's going to get lucky tonight? That maybe you'll say something on Monday or Tuesday? Or as a man, do you ever walk into the middle of that situation? Every year, every boy on our team has to sign a pledge. And on that pledge has all the domestic violence statistics. Boy, 1 to 3 million women sexually assaulted by intimate partners, over 650,000 rapes, probably underreported by 4 or 5 to 1. 1 out of 5 teenage dating relationships involve some kind of physical and or sexual force. Give them all of these statistics, teach that to them, and then have them pledge that as a man, I never feel powerful when others are powerless. Whenever I hear sexist language and put-downs of girls and women, I'm going to stand up and speak out on behalf of. When I hear homophobic language and labeling of other boys, I'm going to stand up and speak out as well. Boy, the problem has been stated here. Boy, it's not the well-meaning men. The problem is the well-meaning men aren't standing up and speaking out. My goal is to raise a whole generation of boys within that school that are going to learn to use their voice on behalf of others. Then what we'll do on every Thursday night, we have a written assignment, trying to get the right and left hemispheres, the thinking, feeling part. So on Thursday night, using the forethought of their mind, they have to write a couple paragraphs about how they're going to treat that date that night of the dance. From the moment they pick her up, bring her to the dance, and then take her home. All of those have to be written. They're then collected for the next practice, and then we pick X number of them that have to be read in front of the whole team. Boy, how you change a culture. And then before the game, we'll take that week, we'll take a half hour before the game, and we'll invite 4 parents off of our team, 2 moms and 2 dads. 2 moms and 2 dads that not only have adolescent sons on our team, but also have adolescent daughters as well. And each of them get 5 minutes to stand in front of 70 high school boys and share about how much they love their daughters, about how they expect them to be treated when they're out on a date with other young men. Boy, we want to use this platform of sports, this power of the whistle, this coach-player relationship that's so elevated in this culture, and try to figure out how do we get coaches to start disseminating the incredible knowledge and information that's gained in this room. How do you do that? You got to just get out of the box. Now, much of the work, and I'll close here in a minute, my wife is a psychotherapist, and what we've done is taken a number of tools, and we've built an awful lot of it on attachment research. Attachment research is part of child psychology. About 40 years ago, there was a psychoanalyst in Britain that was working with what we then called juvenile delinquents. And he started to make the connection between the way that they were raised and their exposure to violence to their outcome. Ended up asking the question, why is it that some parents have the ability to allow their children to attach to them in a way, to relate to them in a way that optimizes that child's social, intellectual, and emotional development? Why do some parents have that ability and others don't? 30 years of research came back and it concluded that the single biggest determinant of a parent's ability to allow their children the maximum impact of that relationship is when a parent has made sense out of their own life, when they have their own coherent narrative, when you go back as an adult and review your life from an adult's perspective. It didn't matter how optimal or suboptimal your own childhood was. No matter how abusive your own history might have been, you're not destined to repeat that in the lives of your children if you make sense out of that. Boy, my wife and I took that research and said, if that's true in parent-child relationship, then it's got to be true in player-coach relationship. We've got to get men to develop their own coherent narrative, to start thinking about all the experiences, all the attitudes, the beliefs, all the messages that they have received. So what I do is take coaches through their own gender issues. Boy, thinking about developing the coherent narrative in order to teach this stuff. Coaches won't teach this stuff. Men won't go near this until they make sense out of it in their own life. Second thing that we built this training on is called social neuroscience. Social neuroscience is really the study of the neurons. And the reality today is you can now prove that relationships change the form and function of the human brain. Your brain has an element called neuroplasticity. You're not hardwired. You're never stuck with who you are at any age. You can rewire your brain. You can rewire your self-concepts of who and what you are. Not only do relationships change the form and function of the human brain, but the human mind has the ability to do that well. So teach coaches. Boy, be disseminators of this information. How do you do that? You've got to make sense how you were exposed to all of the wrong messages about your own masculinity, your messages about girls and women. Once I look into my mind and understand how that impacted me as a young man, that empathically allows me to understand others. Then rather than just reading some curriculum, boy, I go into my own life story as a coach, and I start sharing how these things had impacted me in a tremendous way. So I want to thank you very much. I want to thank Ted and Tony, and you all have been plowing concrete for a long time. And I would just, stay strong, stay faithful. There is a movement taking place in this country. And if we could ever get the sports world online and get connected to it and start holding that accountable, we'd make a huge impact in helping boys to become men of empathy and integrity who will lead, be responsible, and change this world for good and learn how to be allies with women. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining Prevent Connect Audio. Prevent Connect Audio is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect Audio are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us at info@preventconnect.org or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.